It's time for Twig This Week at Google. Jeff Jarvis and Stacey Higginbotham are here. We're going to talk about the latest from Mobile World Congress, including Google's kind of goofy presence there. We've got some amazing statistics from YouTube and a phone with a built-in aquarium. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly, CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 394, recorded Wednesday, March 1st, 2017. Tardigrade feeding time. This Week in Google is brought to you by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get three meals free with your first purchase with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twig. And by Segment, the leading unified customer data platform. Segment collects data across your websites, mobile apps, and cloud platforms and delivers it to over 170 third-party tools and apps. Get 3 months free on the Segment team plan when you sign up at segment.com/twit. And by Eero. Why settle for just a Wi-Fi router when you can have a brilliant, hyper-fast, super-simple Wi-Fi system? No more buffering, no more dead zones. Finally, Wi-Fi that works. To get Eero, visit Eero, Eero.com, Best Buy, or Amazon today. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest news from Google, Facebook, Twitter, the cloud, journalism, what Jeff had for breakfast, basically anything we want to talk about. Jeff Jarvis is here, professor of journalism at the City University of New York, author of many great books, including Geeks Bearing Gifts.
Blogger. No, since being a blogger and being accused of only staying in our pajamas at home, I refuse in every sound check to say what I had for breakfast.
But you are in mom's basement, right?
Yeah. And these are my pajamas. Actually, we'll find out soon why I'm wearing black, because I'm in mourning. But
actually,
we'll get
it's beautiful. I like what you're wearing. It's very very velvety.
I'm in mourning.
Is it a tracksuit?
Yeah, it looks like. Are you running?
No, it's
Jeff?
Just a hoodie.
It's just a hoodie. That's Stacey Higginbotham. Stacey on IoT, IoTpodcast.com, joining us from Austin, Texas. My daughter's going down for Austin for spring break. I hear
during
it's
during South By?
I wonder, actually. That wasn't the plan, but if it is during South By, I'll make sure she goes on over and visits.
When is she heading to Austin?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, if she needs anything,
I will have her look you up.
Look,
see your modern house, your 22nd century house.
Oh, yes.
So where do we start today? I don't see any, usually I can see a foothold, a good place to something chewy we can really begin with. And I don't see.
I have two things that I can't wait to talk about these.
Good. That's what I'm looking for.
Okay. One was I saw that Google officially announced that they were canceling the Pixel, and I was sad for Jeff.
Oh, I didn't see that. Oh, they're canceling the Chromebook?
I believe so.
Oh.
Let's find it.
That's the best laptop ever made.
Oh, wait. Now it's not happening.
This is why Google. I'm in mourning. What?
Google calls time. Okay. This was at Mobile World Congress?
No, this was a random.
They said that. No, they're not doing it. He said they're not doing it. They're not making it.
This is from TechCrunch. Frédéric Lalinois. In a small meeting with journalists at the Mobile World Congress in Barcelona today, Rick Osterloh, who, of course, remember he was the head of Motorola, now is senior vice president for hardware at the Goog, said that the Pixel laptop has hit the end of the line after just two iterations. When asked if Google had plans to produce any more laptops, Osterloh said, no plans to do one right now. You know, actually, I'm actually glad to see this, because now I can pull the trigger. I've been waiting on, because I with you, like you, Jeff, as nice as the Chromebook Plus is, and by the way, I gave it to my daughter. She's a college senior. She had the Chromebook Pixel, and she wanted something lighter. So I brought the Samsung. I said, well, what is this? And this, the beauty of a Chromebook is she can say, yeah, I'll take that one, and just logs in, and it's just her Chromebook immediately. Mm-hmm. So she liked the lightweight Samsung. But she, you know, she didn't, I don't think she has the same standards for hardware that that you do. So
I have very high standards.
I'm looking for a Pixel replacement, and I still think Dell, when they come out with a touchscreen Dell for work, Dell for business Chromebook will be a good choice. Have you decided?
Well, you know what I did?
What?
I did return the Samsung. The sound went out and didn't work, so that made the decision for
perfect.
Me. And you know what else I did?
What else did you do?
I went and I bought the only lightly used Chromebook Pixel 2015 I could find.
This was just because nothing's wrong with yours, but it's just as a backup.
I just want a backup. I just want a backup. Yeah.
How much did you pay for it?
$1,000. There were two online. One was $1,800. Okay. Oh. So somebody got it. And then a nice, civilized, decent, moral person charged $1,000 for it. That's the only ones you could find online, period. There are tons of 2013s that are running about $350. But, you know, I have that and don't want that. Sorry, it's a lot in this morning outfit. I bought a second Pixel because I'm that concerned. I'll use one at home and one in the office. Right. I have the 2013 in the office. I'll take one of these in there. And but then I don't know what happens.
Osterloh said Chrome OS is a huge initiative in the company. Google hasn't backed away from laptops. We have the number two market share in U.S. and U.K., but we have no plans for Google branded laptops. In other words, they're going to
there is no premium Chromebook.
Yeah. Well, there could
Samsung
be. This
is not an premium.
Yeah. And I don't think the Pro will be any more premium.
No, it's mid-range, which is good. I mean, mid-range is new too. They were all low-end. They were all tinny low-end except for the Pixel. I think Google should have waited until somebody made a decent one. Now, the truth is, they did. I have no idea how many they sold. Very few, I'm sure. It was just a way to show what Chrome can do. But now we don't have that. Now, if you want to go out, if I convince somebody to buy that Chromebook and buy the best Chromebook they can get, they're going to get a mediocre Chromebook compared to what
By the way, there is an update. Frederic then put in this because Osterloh maybe got in a little hot water. I don't know because he sent us an additional comment regarding the future of Google branded laptops, whether called Pixel or not. I should clarify, we don't have any plans to discuss at this time.
That's just like,
I got in trouble.
Yeah. At this time. But it implies that maybe at some time they will. Yeah, I wish you wouldn't do that. If you're not going to do it, don't do it. And let us then pick the best one available. Because otherwise, I was waiting for Pixel 3, right?
Yeah, so the Asus is going to have you tweeted that, Leo, that there is an Asus with more memory coming, more RAM coming.
Yeah. I think that's probably,
I can't find it anywhere.
That's the one to watch. Asus makes great stuff. They do sell the Pixel C tablet still on the store, which is
they do,
and kind I have of surprising two of to me, frankly.
Yeah. I love it still.
Yeah,
I love
it. You were the only one.
It took a little getting used to. I loved my, but I also loved my Nexus 7, and that's gone.
Yeah.
I mean, this is Google.
Yeah. God, it's a shame.
So I put up a post from, do you know Tariq Krim?
I do not. I mean, I know the name. You've mentioned him before.
So he put up a post on Facebook just asking, and I don't think coming off the Pixel is necessarily the basis for that for this kind of worry, but he adds it up and just starts to ask whether Google is the new Microsoft. They've got these chat apps that nobody's using. They come out with hardware and they stop. You know, it's confusing, maybe a little overblown, but you know, one always has to wonder. One always has to ask. I really like and really use what Google does, but when they desert you, I don't want to sound like, you know, the guy who complained for 20 years about Google getting rid of an RSS reader.
I have been kind of intrigued.
I am still upset about that, though.
Yeah, right. I mean, I use Feedly, so I still have an RSS reader. But I did tweet that what we really should do for you, Jeff, is just get you get a premium laptop. Just pick one that you just love all the features. And we'll put a nice Linux on it. And you'd probably be happy. If you stuck to Chrome, it would be no different than a Chromebook. You'd probably be very happy.
Yeah, but there's things that I can now do, like download Amazon movies and download Google Play. And I probably can't do that stuff, you know?
Actually, that's an interesting debate because the W3C has kind of certified Google and Firefox and Microsoft's decision to put copy protection into their browsers. This is a requirement of Amazon and Netflix. And I just read somebody, I can't remember who it was, kind of castigating Tim Berners-Lee at the W3C for kind of surrendering DRM. To DRM. Like he said, you know, you should, you know, you don't have to agree. Tim Berners-Lee, according to Mike Masnick, love Mike in Tech Dirt, offers depressingly weak defense of his decision. So DRM is now in the HTML5, or at least, with Tim Berners-Lee's endorsement, will be in the HTML5 standard in the form of encrypted media extensions.
Oh, speaking of Mike Masnick, his legal fund is active.
Oh, good, because he's being sued by the guy who did or didn't invent email, depending on whether
Don't
you're him or not.
Don't get me started on that. Also, I'll get sued.
And good. So Mike has, is it on techdirt.com? I bet it is.
I'm sure it is. I donated. It was a couple days ago that I donated, but yeah, I think it's through a different organization.
Maybe because I don't see any link on the front page here.
Uh-oh, what if I donated to somebody's non-existent legal fund?
Well, they'll be very happy to get the money, I'm sure.
It's the Tech Dirt Survival Fund.
Boy, you'd think Tech Dirt would link to it, wouldn't you?
You would. It's at isupportjournalism.com.
Right on.
With a URL like that, how could you not?
You had to give. You had to give.
Exactly.
All right, so there's that. Actually, we probably do have quite a few more things to talk about. There it is, because I support journalism. We probably
there's also Pixel Assistant on my phone finally coming soon, I think, I hope.
Yeah.
Which Google phone, Assistant.
Which phone do you use?
I have the 5X.
Okay, so Google has said, yeah, we're gonna make the assistant more available. Do you use Allo?
No, I don't use Allo.
Because Allo has the assistant in it.
Yeah, I mean, I downloaded Allo. Who else is in Allo?
Right.
I once couldn't find Kevin Toefel, so I pinged him on, you know, messages, Facebook, Twitter, and Allo.
I would use Allo, but Google didn't do the one thing I can't. It baffles me. I can use Facebook Messenger as an SMS app on my Pixel on any Android phone. I can use Signal. But I can't use Google's own Allo. I can use Hangouts. I can't use Allo. If that would make it the de facto choice, right?
No.
Now they're making Android Messenger, which is confusing because Samsung's Messenger's got the same name. But the Google flavor of Messenger is now going to be called Android Messages. And maybe that means, when you get the Pixel, they encourage you to use Messages, now Android Messenger, as your SMS app, but you can still use Hangouts, and Hangouts is better for me because Hangouts is my Google Voice number. It's on everything. I can use the desktop to send messages and receive messages. Now there's meat. I'm just, God diggity darn it. What's meat?
Why? Who is in charge
Hangouts
over there?
For business. Well, that's what Tariq was saying. This is looking a little wacky.
So Meet, an enterprise-friendly version of Hangouts, because there just aren't enough.
Does that mean Hangouts was always enterprise-friendly. I mean, I used it at every single company
Meet is intended just to do the video conferencing stuff, right?
So it's like telepresence? No.
No, but I guess it's strip. I think the plan is, and I feel like this has been mentioned before, to get video conferencing out of Hangouts and put it in something else.
How do you guys feel about video just in general, like for casual work conversations?
The only time I ever use it was with my mom and other family members, long distance family members. So it's like being with a family. I would never, like if I called you, I wouldn't do a video call.
I get lots of requests now for video interviews with people. And I'm kind of like,
can't
benefit
we just do
of
it on
not
the phone.
Yeah, and you know, everybody.
I think
has
I think
their
they want to see your Stacey, they want to see you on your pink beanbag chair. That's why you get
the
request.
That is my daughter's pink beanbag chair.
Likely story.
An addition to the Stacey cave. Story. There is a pink amorphous pink blob in the corner now.
Yes,
it is. It's a monogrammed amorphous pink blob.
It's.
So I think she you comes do in the show and from that.
She keeps you company. That's cute.
Yeah, she comes in and draws and reads and talks to me and tells me I'm not a real writer. So
what?
She's a real writer. She writes fiction and she's pushing me to write fiction.
Nonfiction writers are not real writers.
It's very cute.
That's really sweet. That's actually kind of a sophisticated concept.
She is a sophisticated child. She's
very sophisticated. So is that why you're wearing mourning, Jeff? Because the Pixel is dead.
Yes, it is.
That's why you're wearing black.
The truth is I always wear black, but I'm co-opting it now.
Yeah.
You know, when with your hood on, you did look like a little like death incarnate coming with your shirt, cheekbones, and like I was like, oh dear Lord, that is frightening. Oh,
I'm so glad Stacy's picking on you now instead of me.
Death is laughing.
Excellent.
It looks like Tariq pulled that down, or because I went to the link and it says this is longer on Facebook.
Oh, sorry, Tariq.
Or maybe it's a private. Maybe it's a private.
Maybe it's private. Oh, maybe then I'm doubly sorry. Anyway, it was a good argument.
So do we want to keep talking about Google, or do we want to talk about the cloud failing?
Why would we talk about
yesterday,
Google?
The cloud failed us all. Amazon's S3. It was just the S3 East. But
it's always the S3 East.
Is it really?
That is the most common one that goes down. It's one of their older data centers. And it's also the default. If you spin up a S3 instance, it's going to be there. So if you're not paying attention when you build your cloud program or when you start hosting stuff on S3, you're going to end up there. And the fact that it's a weak place means it's...
We use Amazon's CloudFront as a load balancer for our website. Our website did not seem to be impacted by it, and maybe that's because we're on West, or because, and I think you can set this up, you know, there's a failover. So if one, so these are, but a lot of sites. Slack was gone.
This kind of drove me nuts because Slack, I used to write about the cloud and spent a lot of time talking to people about how they architect things. And it is possible to have your site go down or have Amazon go down or one availability zone go down and not be affected.
You should have a failover.
So failovers now, that is more expensive. And it does require a level of sophistication that might not be available to you. I don't know. I feel like it's almost inexcusable for like a site like Trello or Slack to go down because people pay for it and it's an enterprise service.
Medium was down, apparently. Was Medium
they're
down?
Just journalists. I don't know what they don't know what they're posts. Doing.
Who cares? Just that Jarvis fella. They came back by 3 p.m. Pacific. So they were pretty much fully normal by 3:10 Pacific. So it was an outage of maybe, I don't know, 5 hours, 6 hours. That's a pretty long.
That's a long time.
The error rates began at 8:40 a.m. This is from Amazon's report. Error rates in all S3 centers began to quickly climb. Our alarms went off by 8:50 a.m. Pacific. Error rates were significantly elevated. Very few requests were completing. By 8:55 a.m., we had multiple engineers engaged in investigating the issue. Our alarms pointed at problems processing customer requests in multiple places within the system across multiple data centers. So maybe it was more than just the East, or maybe the East failure created system load elsewhere. At 9:41 a.m., we determined the servers within S3 were having problems communicating with each other. S3, I didn't know this, but they use a gossip protocol to spread server state information throughout the system. That's how they're supposed to root around failed or unreachable servers. But the gossip failed. The gossip failed. On Sunday, we had seen a large number of servers that were spending almost all their time gossiping. And I'm not making this up. And a disproportionate amount of servers had failed while gossiping. So maybe there was a gossiping issues. So in fact, they think it was related because at 10:32, after exploring several options, we...
Oh, wait, stop. Your chat room is smarter than all of us.
This is 2008. Yes. What am I looking at? Jeez Louise. I never make mistakes. You had one job, Leo.
As Leo goes, so goes the world.
Apparently, this happened in 2008.
It did. I think people used to say they called that
one. I swear to God, the article I was reading from was dated by Tyler Durden, February 20th, 2017. But for some reason, Tyler decided to quote an old Amazon event report. This is from several years ago.
That was when Skynet failed. That was what they called it.
The Skynet failure.
I remember that failure.
Do you think this, though, what does this mean? You shouldn't trust the net?
Oh, I have so many opinions on this because, again, that's what people pay me for or something.
I should never read articles by Tyler Durden, probably. That's the first thing. Wasn't he the guy in
First
Fight Club?
Rule of journalism.
Yeah, first rule of journalism is... Don't read Tyler Durden bylines. there's no Tyler here.
No.
So tell me what happened.
Oh, I don't know what
I was having I fun reading about any... gossip.
Yeah, I didn't realize they had an error report out yet. So
no, I think they don't. I think that we don't have the analysis yet.
So without knowing what happened yet, and if someone finds it, let me know. But S3 is a bedrock.
Sure.
Service for Amazon.
It's their storage service.
It is their basic storage service. They have all kinds of crazy fun stuff there. So where was I going with this? Oh, but Netflix didn't go down. Some of the sites that did go down, I worry that they are not architecting. It's hard to say don't architect to Netflix's standards because Netflix is like the company that gave us Chaos Monkeys and this concept of designing for resiliency. But, and again, since we don't exactly know what happened yet, it's hard to say, but I think better planning is probably good. And I mean, even AWS, their dashboards were down for a little bit because they hosted it on S3. So hosting your dashboard notifications on a site that might go down is kind of an example of this. So I don't know. It also took down the Internet of Things.
Oh, did it? So IoT devices suffered too, huh?
Ooh.
Yeah, it took down If This Then That. So a bunch of people
that's
were complaining about
that.
That's
right, I saw that. Yeah. And that's the backbone for IoT in many cases.
For some people, but you can always go to the base service. But it also took down Ring, the doorbell company, for they had problems. Canary, the security company. Piper, and I want to say something else.
Lots of people.
Probably lots of other things, yes.
Runkeeper was down. Imgur was down. Docker's registry hub was down, which meant that probably you couldn't register a Docker. Doesn't mean Docker was down, but that's a big deal. Now searching for any explanation for Amazon, all I've seen here is that it wasn't an outage, but a case of increased error rates.
That happens because, I mean...
See, Stacey, he's right.
What?
There's more errors in the world.
Falling apart. The world is falling apart. It's all because of the millennials. Anyway, everything's
I'm not a
now.
Millennial. I'm a hardcore Gen Xer
all right.
with millennial tendencies.
I can't blame you then.
No.
All right. Well, next week we'll tell you what happened. I'll read from a more recent report.
2009. Next week on Twig, 2009.
Somebody tweeted, according to our chat room, somebody tweeted they couldn't turn off their smart lights.
So they couldn't turn them off using If This Then That. But
right.
You could still turn them
off. You
go
off. To the switch and turn them off.
And I will say to you, here we go. Wink has local access in your hub. So the Wink hub, I could still control my devices. SmartThings is actually hosted in AWS, and my SmartThings stuff actually worked just fine. If you have Insteon gear, that was going to be fine because there's local hubs and control there. So, you know, maybe relying on If This and That for your core stuff may not be the best idea.
I said I went to a site. I can't remember the name of it. Like, is it down? Wasn't Is It Down For Me?
Yes, Is It Down or Is It Down For Me or just
Is It Down was down.
Yes.
Oh.
Which just shows you can't rely on it. Isn't that funny? So yeah, I mean, these happen all the time, right? The internet is, it's not fragile, but it's all interconnected, and it's not you get power outages too in the grid. I mean, things happen. And
I once had to walk downstairs and open my garage door manually because
my God.
I know. I almost didn't know how to do it.
Neo said he couldn't close his IoT garage door. But there is a string on all garage doors that they work even if the power is out.
I have this vision of Stacy and her Soylent Green fortress.
Yeah.
Nothing.
So
can get
the
in.
Last thing on the Twitter, on Amazon's Web Services Twitter feed is, for S3, we believe we understand root cause and are working hard at repairing. Future updates across all services will be on dashboards. That, though, is from yesterday. And is so the radio silence from AWS at this point.
They it takes a bit to.
I'm sure.
Figure out.
I do not want to be one of those engineers with his hair on fire. Hey, I have to apologize because I did not disclaim Amazon Web Service is a sponsor of our podcast.
Oh, right. We forgot that. Yes.
I should have said that. I don't know how that affects anything, but I should say it because. Then you'll know, I guess, and you can. I believe in doing that. I agree; it's an important thing to say. So,
Oh, you know what? I mentioned Ring too. I don't know if that matters as going down.
Ring
as
this is the problem. Is Ring is also a spy. At some point, we're just going to. The whole thing is assume
the whole thing
that everything
is
we talk
so,
about.
You are so popular. You are so rich and successful.
Everything we
you
talk
are
about.
You are the Trump of podcasts.
You see,
the greatest,
by the way,
podcast, the greatest sponsor.
Oprah Winfrey is thinking about throwing her hat into the ring for 2020.
So is Bob Iger. Bob Iger.
Jinx.
CEO of Disney.
Oh, whoops.
Yes.
Jinx.
And I guess what both have deduced from the past election is you don't have to have political experience to run and win.
Knowledge or expertise or anything.
I would vote for Oprah. She's cool.
Oh, she would drive me nuts.
Well, the speeches would be a little
Oh, she'd tell us all savvy. To go to sleep. Oh, that's Ariana. She'd tell us to keep lists of the things we've accomplished today.
She's run a successful business and she's probably overcome quite a bit.
I think she's brilliant.
And savvy lady.
Yes, true to all of that, she also drives me nuts.
And you'd get a car, and you'd get a car, and you and you, and you'd get a car.
Everybody look under their ballot boxes.
Mobile World Congress, you want to talk about that? Let's take a break, and we'll come back. We'll talk, because I'm sure they talked a lot about it on All About Android yesterday, because there's a lot of Android device news. In fact, it's mostly Android device news. We can talk about that a little bit. Our show today brought to you by Blue Apron. Let's see. This week on Blue Apron, I made a lovely udon noodle soup that was so good. Discovered a new ingredient called verjus, V-E-R-J-U-S. It was amazing. Used blood orange juice in the couscous. That was incredible. I did a lovely tempura cod. And then day before yesterday, I ran out because we did all three. I'm waiting for our next box. I did a chicken breasts. Couscous and sautéed broccoli, and I discovered a new way of doing capers, of kind of sautéing them till they're crispy. It was, and then using that as a topping. See, Blue Apron's great because I like to cook. I really do. And one of the nice things about cooking, especially with your family or cooking for a loved one, is it's kind of this wonderful sensation that you're doing something really wonderful for them. The house fills with beautiful aromas, and they come home and you go, yeah, and you sit down. Here's your dinner, and it's just wonderful. I also like the creativity involved. But one thing, it's hard to come up with new recipes and new ideas. A lot of times I'll make the same thing over and over again. Sometimes I'm too tired to shop, and we'll eat out. And we've really been trying to cut back on eating out. Eating out is bad, not just for your pocketbook, but there's lots of calories in this delicious food that they make for you. And I just prefer to make something healthy and fresh from Blue Apron. Now, here's how it works. Blue Apron will deliver to your door a refrigerated box, nothing's frozen, even the meat, the fish, they're all nice and chilled. You pick the menu. So you go to the Blue Apron website And before the box comes, you pick what items, what menu items you want in your box. They give you exactly what you need to make those meals. No more, no less. So there's no waste. I had one blood orange. Even the verjus, I only needed like a quarter cup of it. So it came in a little tiny verjus bottle. It was so cute. The meals cost less than $10 per person. You can prepare them in about 40 minutes. You get a completely easy-to-follow recipe card. And everything's pre-portioned, so it's almost as if you have a sous chef putting everything together for you. And it's really fun. It's a great feeling. And now you know how to make it, you can make it again. And by the way, they cost less than the grocery store. This is not an expensive. In fact, they also reduce food waste. And their freshness guarantee promises every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook or they'll make it right. But I've had many Blue Apron boxes now. We've been a regular subscriber for, I think, more than a year. And I've only had the best, most delicious stuff from Blue Apron. What should I make tonight? Salmon piccata with orzo and broccoli? Pork chops and miso butter with bok choy and marinated apple? You want that? I'm making something. I know pork chops are on the recipe for tonight. Vegetable chili and baked sweet potatoes with crispy tortilla strips. Spicy
pork and apples.
Spicy shrimp coconut curry with cabbage and rice. So here's the deal. I'm going to get you three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping when you go to blueapron.com/twig. The box never comes without you picking it, right? It's not automatic, so there's no weekly commitment. You get deliveries when you want them. You customize it every week based on your dietary preferences. But get those first three meals free with your first purchase at blueapron.com/twig. blueapron.com/twig, a better way to cook. And yes, I use my June oven with my Blue Apron. It's kind of the best of both worlds. I've been cooking a lot more thanks to that June oven. Thank you, Stacy. Thank you, Stacy.
Yay.
Thank you, Mrs. Higginbotham.
So I will say this. We talk about it on the podcast tomorrow, but Kevin had a problem with his oven.
What happened?
One of the heating elements just didn't work, so they sent it back. And they apparently support was great. But I was like, oh, Kevin, I'm so sorry. He's like, Barb, that's his wife, didn't even mind.
These things happen, you know.
They do.
Yeah. And I will, I saved the boxes so I could send it back if I had to. But
oh, heck yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have a warehouse with boxes of the stuff that you
mostly
bought?
Mostly I don't save boxes. This one I'm saving the box for. But usually, if it's a computer, I save it for a week or two. I don't save it. Who wants to have it? I used to, and I gave it. It's like too many boxes.
Yeah, the day I finally went through the attic.
Yeah. Your husband, did he stop?
He had to stop because I started buying so many things.
That's why I stopped. Yeah.
So
it only works if you don't buy a lot of things.
Exactly.
but when you're in our business, you got to try everything, right?
Well, I say I only try like half the things because everything would be crazy.
Oh, you couldn't try everything. No.
What is verjus? Is it green juice?
No, it's wine colored. It might be made out of wine, but they say it's a great, it's a highly acidic acidic juice made by pressing unripe grapes, crab apples, or other sour fruit. It's used instead of lemon juice, but it has this wonderful flavor. Apparently, it's from the Middle Ages. It was widely used as a condiment or an ingredient in sauces in the Middle Ages. We used it to deglaze after I sautéed the chicken. I deglazed it with verjus.
Okay.
And it was really good. And Lisa doesn't like vinegar, so I thought this was a good alternative to vinegar because it has kind of a, it's kind of vinegary, but without being vinegar. You liked the verjus, right? Do you remember that? No, you didn't like it, did you? Okay.
Never mind.
She doesn't like tangy stuff. No. I don't know why. I like tangy stuff. So there you go. How about that, huh?
Indeed. All right.
So
let's see. Oh, the Mobile World Congress?
Yeah, Mobile World Congress. So lots of phones.
Right.
Lots of phones. Nothing from Google. But there's the LG G6, which looks very nice. It's a weird dimension. It's actually 2x1. And they said they wanted to do that because they wanted a 5.7-inch screen, but they wanted you to be able to operate it with one hand. So it's tall. And I don't know
I might like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that look, there's these phones are all the same now, right? It's just how many rounded glass slabs, you know, so you need something to differentiate. So that is something people complain about is the big phones are hard to operate with one hand. So, you know, maybe this is
you know what I want? I want a phone so when I pick it up, I immediately know what top is.
Oh, I agree with you on that. There's no phone like that.
Every phone, you've got to turn them around. It's like the USB problem, right? So either there is no top, which is one possibility, or there's some kind of bumpy thing or something. So I just know what the top is.
Speaking of USB, this wasn't at Mobile World Congress, but Wall Street Journal published a rumor, but since it's Wall Street Journal, I think it's very credible, that Apple is going to abandon the Lightning port on its new phone and go Type-C.
Thank you.
I mean, it's going to be very upsetting to people like me who bought a lot of Lightning port accessories.
God, just pick one standard, people. I don't need that many accessories.
Well, the story goes, apparently, that the when Apple adopted Lightning in 2010, they're part of the USB-C coalition, and they, in fact, were an early adopter on their MacBooks, but that wasn't ready in 2010, and they wanted to get rid of the 30-pin. It was taking up too much room, so they opted for Lightning. But now this is going to be a painful switch. People are going to be very upset because, I mean, I've spent hundreds of dollars on Lightning cables, Lightning docks. Oh. I still go. I bet you guys do, too. You go to hotels, and the clock radio still has a 30-pin dock, right? Like, they didn't even bother to update 6 years ago. So they'll be in good shape.
I noticed, and this is like the tiniest portion of my life, but I bought a suitcase, a Raiden connected suitcase with, like, a charging port and stuff in it. Mm-hmm. And an app because it was a smart suitcase. I loved it.
Wait a minute. Your suitcase has an app.
Okay. I sent it back. And the reason I did is because it used old school USB, micro USB, and I've got my phone charges on USB-C.
C is definitely the way to go. Yeah.
But I didn't want to buy a dongle, like a little thing to hang off my suitcase because that just felt stupid. So, but then I was thinking about all these devices out there that are kind of like supposed to be future-proofed, and now...
What does the app do?
So, okay. So the suitcase is very pretty.
Yeah, it's white. Or I guess they have different colors, but...
I bought it in navy blue.
Okay.
But just in case you were wondering, I bought it because I wanted something that charged my phone. The battery is built into the suitcase. You can remove it if you want.
One of our sponsors, Away, they made the same kind of thing, yeah. But they didn't have an app.
So the app is so you can it's got a scale in it so you see the weight on the app. And then it also, and this was not a functionality I cared about.
Wait a minute, with the suitcase is just sitting there.
No, you have to pick it up.
Oh, you
pick it up. When you pick it up, it gives you the weight.
You pick it up? Like the handle has a scale in it?
I guess. I don't know where the physical scale is. You just pick it up by the handle
and then this phone says 32 pounds?
Yes.
Must have a scale in the handle.
So interesting. That, and then it also, like a tracker or a tile, it also wanted, they wanted to create a network of these Raiden suitcases, but it didn't use one of those networks. It used its own network, which was kind of,
that's kind of a problem because, I mean, how many suitcases have they sold?
Right.
Yeah.
So that's what it was.
You returned it because you were just reviewing it.
No, I returned it. My husband bought it for me for Christmas because I wanted a suitcase and he knows me and was like, a smart suitcase for my honey. Oh,
that is really sweet.
Isn't it?
And then just like my wife, you returned it.
Well, yes, but for good reason.
Do you know how that guts us, right, Jeff? You buy a gift.
It does not.
I can't remember the last time I was able to successfully.
This is why guys don't buy gifts anymore.
Okay. He returns half the stuff I buy for him.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I once bought him a bottle of like really fancy scotch because he's so hard to buy gifts for.
Yeah.
And he kind of mocked me for a while. He's like,
that's not okay.
I mean, not in a mean way, just like, I didn't really need this, Stacey. And then I felt bad about spending a lot of money on a nice bottle of scotch for him.
In my family, I will confess, as I grew up, we would all, before opening the gift, the giver would always say, it's returnable.
It's returnable. This is the worst.
We came to call these living gift certificates.
it's, I mean, I, what would Tony Robbins say? Wait, stop saying it's returnable. Have some confidence. You're going to love this. And then they don't, because they never do.
And they feel very awkward, and I wouldn't like that.
Nah.
You know what? Lisa and I have worked it out. She just puts what she wants in her in the shopping cart and sends me a link.
This is what my husband's family does. They don't buy any. To me, it's like a registry for your like presents, and I'm kind of like,
yeah, what's wrong with that? It's a registry.
But then, I mean, part of.
She says, just go to my shopping cart in Etsy and you'll find some surprises.
Yeah, I think you should always have at least one good surprise. So, and if it doesn't succeed, that's okay.
I know. But it's hard because as men, we're already, you know, self-conscious about our gift giving.
Yep. And yeah, I've given up clothes. Impossible.
Can't get clothes.
Long since. No, can't have.
I don't know if I'm going to give you a man pass on this.
It's either too big or too small. I mean, it's
What were you thinking?
I look like a circus performer in this dress. You can't win. You cannot win. I'm just saying. Next time, I'm going to buy you a water bear aquarium.
This is the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
So water bears are tardigrades, right?
They're awesome.
That's kind of is this brine shrimp? Is it the same or?
No, they are different, but they are like
they're algae sturdy. Chomping microorganisms,
and they live forever. You find water bears that are millions of years old. There might be water bears on Mars.
Look up the pictures of the close up of water bears because they're so cool.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
There's more.
Google
tardigrade.
Yeah, and images. And so they're really cool, but you don't see that.
Oh, yeah, because this is like a micro, like electron microscope.
Right? Wait, so that's really water like that's that? Really
that's
cool.
That's what they look like.
Yeah.
See, I could buy that. That's on, that's an Etsy. I could buy that. No. All right.
No, so, don't. I'm going to tell you right now. Don't buy
tardigrades for your wife. Okay. So Google's doing an app that's like a Tamagotchi?
No, Google's doing a phone add-on that has live.
They're actually live?
Yes. Because they wanted to do something that was just so different. Nobody would have thought of it. Well, maybe because nobody did it. Maybe that's the reason you should not do it.
Is this Project Era? Is this an Era module?
Yes. It's the follow-on. It felt like the Onion to me.
It doesn't seem real. Here's an early mock-up of the tardigrade module that would snap onto your phone. I mean, they are microscopic, so they don't take up a lot of room.
So are they trying to show off their camera lenses? Or, I mean, it's cool that you could see a really small creature through your phone? I don't know.
So, okay, I get it. So you do see them close up.
Oh, I see. I didn't
thanks
get that.
Thanks to science. Okay, so it has a built-in microscope.
That's cool.
I think there's a PETA fight coming.
Over tardigrades? Really?
Oh,
no,
come
these
on.
Things live
you can't
like,
torture a tardigrade.
Yeah,
but that is nice because they because you so you're saying if I got one on my phone, it would last longer than the phone. Right?
Possibly.
What does
if
it
you
feed
get a goldfish,
on?
They die.
What does
I
it
don't
eat?
Know what their actual lifespan is. I just know that you can freeze them, you can do crazy things to them, and you thaw them out. Like they've thawed out chunks of like ice that have had tardigrades living in them, or not living, but like frozen in them, and they revive them
from
after like hundreds of thousands
right.
of years.
Yeah, like brine shrimp. But they're not brine shrimp. I got it. From VentureBeat. Before Google canceled Aura in August 2016, an avalanche of module proposals had poured in from outside developers. Over 1,000 of those, there were at least 100 credible submissions that Google was going to pursue, including the water bear aquarium. When Google shut the tardigrade program down, quote, we were literally like a week away from connecting the optics stack to the app. It was like all working. It was one of the few things you couldn't possibly ship a phone with. There was no way Apple was going to produce a phone that did that. It would have worked.
It's April Fools, right? They just
early April Fools.
It's March Fools.
I think this is actually pretty cool.
The technology is neat. I mean, because imagine having a super powerful microscope. I don't know if that's what I know that this is an aquarium concept, but if you had, you could turn a phone into a super powerful microscope. Think about like disease identification in like third world countries. That could be super cool.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, really, these phones are so powerful, and the ability to add stuff, that would be the real promise of Project Ara. It wasn't going to be a consumer product. That's the real problem.
So why? I put up how to care for tardigrades at the bottom of the Google section.
Oh, finally.
They suck out juices from moss, algae, and they eat nematodes.
Oh, good. I have a real nematode problem.
Plankton.
Oh, look at their X-ray radiation. These are the cockroaches of the microbiology world.
Levels of X-ray radiation 1,000 times the lethal human dose. They can sustain. They can sustain it. They don't. They can't be.
They
killed
can survive
by
boiling in alcohol.
Alcohol. Vacuum.
What temperature does alcohol boil at?
Space.
Okay.
This is the module, basically. How to kill? How can you kill a tardigrade?
A lot, 173 degrees.
Oh, it's hot. Well, it's less than water, but it's still pretty hot. Waymo suing Uber for lasers. Did we do this last week?
No, we did that they hired.
Yeah.
It's close. Lawsuit. We did that they hired an executive. So I think that they went after the executive.
Lewandowski, Anthony Lewandowski.
Yeah.
Apparently took with him when he left Uber 14,000 confidential and proprietary design files. I'm sorry, we left Google and went to Uber, including design. And this is the key, designs of Waymo's LiDAR. And then shortly after, Waymo had announced that they had a way to cut the cost of LiDAR, but like 10 times, right? I thought we did do this last week. Didn't we do this last week?
No, we did.
It's all blurring together. Sorry.
We should just not talk about cars anymore.
Tens of thousands of Chromebooks have failed because of Symantec Bluecoat. What?
If that's the firewall you're going through.
Oh, this is Maryland's Montgomery School
District. It's not a Chromebook problem. It's a Symantec problem.
In Maryland, the school system uses 120,000 Chromebooks and multiple PCs.
Amazing.
All running Chrome. When they updated to Chrome OS 56, 30% couldn't log on. And when the PCs upgraded to Chrome 56, they couldn't reach the web either. It was a man-in-the-middle SSL web proxy that the school uses, the Symantec Bluecoat. It examines SSL and transport layer encrypted web content. In other words, it's a man-in-the-middle. So far, so good. If you want to make sure your seventh graders aren't peeking into foot pornography, but it doesn't work with TLS 1.3, which is, of course, what the new Chrome uses. TLS 1.3 is actually a big improvement to 1.2. We talked about it on Security Now on Tuesday. And it is also faster, and it's more secure, but it's apparently not compatible with Bluecoat. So don't use Bluecoat, I guess, or get an updated version. Famous patent troll that's suing Google. Eolus, remember them? The case has been booted out of East Texas. What?
Oh, thanks, East Texas.
Aww.
For once.
Aww. Eolus, God, they lost a bunch of big cases. They were suing Microsoft, I think. And they lost. The Texas jury struck down their claim to own the interactive web. They were suing Google, Amazon, and Yahoo. They're saying, hey, we invented interactivity. By the way, Eolus had a partner in that suit, the University of California.
You know what I always thought tech companies with their infinite millions and distributed workforce should do? They should actually put an engineering operation in Tyler, because then you could start stacking the jury in your favor.
Well, this is good news for for Google. The trial was transferred to the Northern District of California. Ooh, not as good as Tyler.
Savvy.
Not as good as Tyler. The company was formed out of a patent filed by Michael Doyle, who was head of IT at University of California, San Francisco, in the late 90s. He claims he created the first program that allowed users to interact with images inside a web browser. That patent means, you know, I own the web. They sued Microsoft in 1999. They won what is believed to be more than $100 million. UC made $30 million out of that. A subsequent case resulted in dozens of settlements from Google, from a bunch of companies, but Google, Yahoo, and JCPenney, remember, fought this 4 years ago. They won. However, it continues on.
You guys want to explain something to me?
Yeah.
I know
I
you
don't
do.
Want to be accused of mansplaining. Don't
That's
don't
why
put
I
me
said
in a trap
explain.
Here.
This is not a trap.
Don't entrap me.
This is, I would love for someone to explain what's happening with RCS messaging and Google versus SMS, because I've been reading it. I just basically didn't want to research it, but I figured I could ask y'all. I was like, hey, I could ask these guys.
This is, it's an improved form of MMS that Google, Rich Communication Services, and it could do a lot more. It will allow for higher quality picture messaging, up to 10 megabytes, group chats, location sharing, video calls. But carriers have to support it. And guess what? Carriers,
you're not into that.
We got our own thing. We don't want to. Plus, Apple's got messages, and so this, and they're not going to do it. So this is really probably a DOA technology, even though Google is not giving up on it. I think they got Sprint to partner with them.
Do they use IP, like the regular web, or do they use the same dedicated cellular channels? Like,
oh, they must. Yeah, they must at this point. I mean, I'm sure that one thing, they go to carriers and say, you could finally kill that SMS thing.
Your SMS servers?
Yeah. Do data servers.
Okay.
In the U.S., Sprint and T-Mobile will support the Universal Profile Standard. Verizon has not rolled out its service yet, but is listed as an official operator. AT&T is already using RCS, but doesn't appear to be supporting Universal Profile. I guess Universal Profile is the authentication. It's not necessary to support it, but it will help with compatibility. This is a mess. Messaging is a mess.
I am with you.
It is a mess.
So here's a question for you. Since I'm only Android and I'm not in Apple worried about what color people are, how can I SMS from my laptop using Chrome?
Only on Hangouts. Or
Hangouts is it.
Yeah. But that will work.
What about using Facebook?
Yes, you could. So this,
I can use Facebook as my SMS if I go ahead and say yes to that request.
You have to take your phone and make one of those things be your SMS messenger. And then if you do that, you can use the desktop version of Facebook Messenger or Signal or any of the SMS compatible programs or Hangouts. I always go back to Hangouts though, because it doesn't seem to, well, what I can send and receive texts from my phone using Facebook Messenger, but it doesn't seem to propagate to Messenger on the desktop properly. So I'm not getting all the messages the SMS messages that
go
to my phone on my desktop. It does work with Hangouts. And I'm sure Google will break this any minute now, but for now, Hangouts seems to be the best way to send and receive text messages that are, in which you are perfectly synced with the text message threads on your phone.
Thank you.
So RCS. So
Thank
Google
you guys.
Bought Google bought a company called Jibe.
I remember that.
And they've created a universal Android client based on the universal profile for advanced messaging. Google's also offering a carrier-hosted service. I'm quoting this from Android Authority, by the way. Google's also offering a carrier-hosted service for operators to launch and manage advanced messaging services so they don't have to do their own infrastructure. But my sense is, you know, this has been going on for a while, that the carriers aren't all that excited about doing this.
The carriers hate anything that, you know, they don't control entirely.
Well, remember, SMS, in many cases, is still a great revenue stream for them, right? They really overcharge. Yeah. And most people by now must have unlimited SMS, right?
I was going to say, most people are probably, there are probably holdouts on plans that don't have unlimited SMS. And those are ridiculously high rates if you can count the amount of data it consumes.
Oh, it's hard.
But at a certain point, you've got to support the service itself. And they have additional equipment. I mean, it's a complicated thing if you're trying to make your back-end telco infrastructure look like a cloud, like one monolithic service where you just split up little chunks for messaging versus having dedicated hardware for it.
Now, this article is from back in November, so there may have been some progress made since then. But T-Mobile and AT&T offer some advanced messaging features through their stock messaging apps. But this is pre the universal profile. Google has RCS support in Messenger 2.0, but it only works on the Pixel XL and Nexus 6P. Sprint is working with Google to bring the messaging app to select LG and Nexus handsets. You can see this is older. I think this is one of those things. They say second quarter 2017 in this article is when we'll see the first devices. So that's the question to ask, is the devices that are being announced now at Mobile World Congress, are those universal profile compatible? I haven't paid a lot of attention to this. I've read up on it, but I haven't paid a lot of attention to it because I feel like it's a waste of time. It's going to be this phone. The carriers don't want to do this kind of stuff, I think. Samsung apparently is going to start doing it. Here's a blog post, undated, February 24th, from Amir Sarhangi, who's the head of RCS at Google, and, you know, selling RCS. RCS messaging is available to users across the world with 27 carriers and device manufacturers launching RCS to Android users with Google. Sprint in the U.S., Rogers in Canada, Telenor in Norway, Orange, Deutsche Telekom, and Globe are planning to support the Jibe RCS cloud from Google, and will be preloading Android messages. So I guess that's why the rename for Android messages, that's the RCS version of messages. But they're also going to include their standard native messaging app. I'm a big fan. I liked XMPP. I'm a big fan of this, but I was burned with XMPP. I really thought that was going to be a standard, and Google abandoned it. That was Google Talk, and they abandoned it. So I hope that they will stick with this, and they can get everybody behind it, and the carriers will support it, because it would be a much better experience. And it's the kind of thing you need to really, we're so far behind China with WeChat, and the things you can do in WeChat, and these are the kinds of technologies that would be enabled. And instead of having a separate third-party app to do it, you'd be doing it with a native messaging app.
Right. So stay on that for a minute. In an age of assistant and embedding functionality into chats, that's what Google is really building. That has a lot of appeal. You'd think that the carriers don't want, they want to just do that proprietarily. They think they're going to invent WeChat.
I may be wrong, but I think that they still are kind of wanting to squeeze the last penny out of SMS messaging.
Well, carriers don't want to give up.
They're short-sighted.
Yeah.
They want to control the services running over their network because they feel that because they have the network, they should be providing the services on top of them. And this goes back to their dumb pipe fears. And if they can control these things, they can get a cut of the revenue. They can do all sorts of fabulous things. They don't want to be irrelevant. Who can blame?
Well, they should go for this. In fact, one of the things he's talking about in this blog post is how businesses could use this to give much more rich, interactive information to customers that message them. It's kind of what Allo, I feel like Allo was kind of moving there, but and really maybe when RCS becomes universal with carriers, then we'll get that kind of experience in every, you know, phone. For instance, here's some images. This is Walgreens. You could start a conversation with Walgreens. You could say, give them a zip code. They give you a map, a list. They say your product is in stock and it's available at this store, and you could navigate there. Here's a boarding pass for a train. So this kind of interactivity, which Allo kind of started, right, could come from businesses as well. I mean, I think this is there's a lot of reasons to do it. Do you think there's some mistrust of Google, though? People don't.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I feel like I'm the ghost of Gina is looking back and saying, "Remember Wave."
Right. Right.
Do you want me to put my ghost of Gina costume on?
We're trying. We may not need the ghost next week. I'm going to be out of the office on Wednesday, and we're trying to. Jason Howell's going to host the show, but we're trying to get Gina on too, which would be
that'd
great.
Be cool.
Yeah. So
that'd be great.
You may have less than a ghostly Gina. Now I'm putting the pressure on because we'd love to see her, and of course you two too. So that's a good question. What's going on with RCS? And it seems like what it is that you've got to get all these disparate groups to agree to support this platform, and Google's the one kind of pushing it along. And Android Messages will be the app
for Allo. No, for RCS.
For RCS, and that's. That okay. may explain Google's ambivalence about messaging, because they hope eventually to get everybody to use Android Messages with RCS built in. And so they don't want to put too much stock in Allo and Hangouts and Meet and all these other apps.
Yeah, Lord forbid you put all of your eggs in one basket as a company that's making products. All right, well, yay.
So the fact that it is a big deal... that at least elsewhere in the world, they're getting some support. The fact that Orange and Deutsche Telekom have agreed is very, very big news. They at Mobile World Congress, they announced 27 new carriers and device manufacturers.
Wow. Okay. See, I feel good that I paid attention to this for a little bit.
Yeah. but this has been going on since 2008.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Okay, well, this was exactly the amount of time I wanted to put into this. So, yay.
And,
thank you, guys.
And to answer your question, unlike mobile messaging apps, database apps, this works over cellular networks irrespective of a user's client, operator, or device. So it does not require internet access on a phone. You could use it on a Nokia 3310 if you wanted to.
Okay.
Yeah, that is exactly enough. In other words, you're saying no more. Right.
No, I'm well. Okay. Yes. 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 That
no
was
more.
My subtle. No more.
Enough RCS.
But good. We want to go?
Yeah, we want to take a break. Is what we want to do, and then we will talk about Google at Mobile World Congress because they are there. They are part of it. Our show today brought to you by a segment. The leading unified customer data platform. I actually had to get them to explain to me. I got on the phone with the people from Segment. They said, well, okay, Leo, you're already using, what, Google Analytics, right? Yeah. Chartbeat, meh. Maybe you're using Optimizely or Mixpanel. You have lots of different tools to see how your websites, your mobile apps, your cloud platforms are doing, who's using them, what they're doing with them, that kind of thing. The problem is each of those, let's take a web page, each of those is integrated into the web page with a little clip snippet of code and more and more and more. And it's a mess. Your engineering team is spending a lot of time with integrations and figuring out how to work. Segment is the plumbing that makes this all much easier. A platform that lets you write one line of integration code, a single API, and it unifies all your data, all your analytics on any platform, from Marketo to MailChimp. It's used by some of the world's best companies. Atlassian uses it, Intuit, New Relic, Reuters. Of course, it supports all the integrations you want to do, hundreds of integrations, all the most popular apps for advertising, analytics, A/B testing, attribution. That's just the A's. And what's nice is you get the Segment dashboard, and that's where your developer, your team, can add a new tool, can kind of sketch out the plumbing, what goes where. It's it's the easiest way to do this. You can integrate a new analytics tool for the data-driven account manager, one for the app-happy marketer, another for the data scientist who needs a unified data warehouse. And Segment brings it all together from any source. You can import historical data. You can customize what ends up in your data warehouse of choice. And, you know, if something happens like yesterday with S3 and one of your analytics tools stops responding, no problem. Segment will collect the data, continue to collect the data. The plumbing still works. And when your tool comes back online, they send it all down. You don't miss a bit. It's the customer data platform that both developers and analysts love because of its elegant API, its extensive partner ecosystem. If you're out there struggling with integrating all these different tools, you're going to love Segment. And your CEO will love your quickly deployed integrations with Zendesk and Intercom and AppNexus and on and on and on. 8,000 of the world's best companies use Segment to drive growth and revenue, to simplify and save money in the long run on a lot of engineering hours. Twit listeners can try the Segment team plan free right now for 3 months. Segment.com/twit. Segment.com/twit. What were you, there was something you wanted to say, Stacy? Something
no.
you wanted to bring up?
No.
No. Google at Mobile World Congress.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
It's a very did they do much that was exciting? Yeah, I didn't
it's
feel
all
like.
Reaching out to people. They didn't make announcements. They just.
Okay.
This is Android with a Torah.
Yeah. There's Android with a Torah, right? Why? Well, it's saying hola. And hello and all the other languages. It's a robot. They had a Tango tetrahedron. So it's inside there's a demo of Tango. Okay. But that was a crowd, right? Trying to get in there, huh? And here's the demo. Participants are split into groups of 4 or 5 people to try it out in person. Here's Google's Daydreams have VR headset demo. Inside a tree. TechCrunch says, it's like a dream inside a tree. Because why not? Androidify your bag. Customize tote bags. And you design the Android yourself. And then head over to the print lab. This is all pathetic.
It's very sad. We should just not even cover this.
There was a Google tuk-tuk. Aren't tuk-tuks from Southeast
Asia?
For no
reason.
For no reason.
Apparently, they're big in Barcelona, having little
really?
Tuk-tuks.
Oh, nice.
I felt like I saw another tuk-tuk story about Barcelona. So, for what it's worth.
Here's a ski hut with Google Assistant.
The amount of money they spend on these things.
Complete with a paper deer head on the wall. Because a real deer head would be, well, you know, disgusting.
Texan.
Shh. Texan in the house.
They have tuk-tuk tours in Barcelona.
Oh,
they're eco-friendly.
Nice.
Oh, and there's a driverless tuk-tuk on display at Mobile World Congress.
That doesn't mean it goes anywhere. It just there's no driver.
Well, yes.
Well, maybe it
okay.
does. I don't know.
I'm assuming at some point it would drive, but there you go.
And here's a little Zen, apparently a plastic Zen garden, because you can walk on the sand and it doesn't, nothing happens. And some plastic cherry trees because it's spring and you're in Barcelona.
That is not very eco-friendly.
And ice carving. This is funny. I guess Frederick Lardinois took all these pictures and uploaded them to TechCrunch.
This is basically like, I have to do a story on this, so I'm not going to spend time on it.
Slideshow, a lot easier. I can't find that. And they didn't actually do anything, so I'll take a picture of all this stupid stuff and make a slideshow.
Look at this. So if you want a smoothie, you pay for it with a high five, and then there's a counter on the wall that shows how many high fives.
Oh, the poor staff who has to do this.
At least you didn't have to wear, you know, a hot dog on a stick type uniform.
Didn't like McDonald's do a promotion like that? Like you had to pay for things by like doing silly dances?
No.
Was that?
Yes, they did do that. You're right. That's right.
That is stupid. Every time I see, maybe I'm old. I might just be cranky.
No, you don't know old.
But hanging out with us is making you old. Watch out.
But I was in a movie theater and they were like, you know, it wasn't just sign up for a discount club. It was like, snap a photo of you being at this movie theater, tag it on Instagram and you could win, you know, tickets. And I was like, who falls for this? This is just using you as a marketing tool for these companies. And
yeah, but free tickets.
Maybe.
But it's the chance. It's not even actual free tickets.
Oh, they should at least give you a ticket.
It's the chance to get free tickets. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, speaking of weird scams, explain something to me. Can you woman explain this to me? Well, first, why am I red? Let me fix that. When somebody on Facebook tells you to don't just share this, cut and paste it. Why are they doing that? What are they getting out of that? Why is that spreading?
Oh, you see it on Facebook all the time.
All the time. What is that?
Because if you share it, it doesn't have the same. I don't know. It doesn't. Then it says Jeff Jarvis shared this as opposed to being a post from Jeff Jarvis.
But what and so what does that accomplish?
Put your
one word in here about how we met. And it's a test to see if you really do this, only if you share that. It's chain letter crap, right?
I didn't put a picture in this post. I don't know how this got to be a meme. I didn't put a picture in this post, but I want to see if anybody reads posts without pictures. So put a one word how we met. What that keeps cropping up year after year. I don't know where.
And I don't know why. Who gets what out of that idiocy?
And you didn't fall for the 20 things. Did you get a tattoo? Have you ever been to New Jersey? Questionnaire thing, right?
I don't do
that. Facebook has a question and a featured answer about this, actually.
It
seems to be some.
Did you
Google that, Stacey? I'm reading through it. It sounds like, well, it's a long answer. But this is hacker related, though. So it's how? Copy. Well, I can't see if why copy and paste a post warning instead of sharing it. Are yours warnings or are they just any post? No.
When somebody says something like, here's 20 things Trump did in December that made me nuts. They say, don't share this, cut it, copy it and paste it into a new post from you. And it has to do with the number of posts. I'm sure it's about SEO.
Ooh, here's a BuzzFeed article on it.
My community.
It's political, but more than just an opinion, but the copy and paste to share. La, 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 la.
You know what else is falling apart? The lead. A good lead, you'd find out. There we go. Here we go.
The theory says that this will be a new text status rather than a share in an existing one, so it will be shown more prominently.
And it'll go in your feed. People are tricking Facebook by copying and pasting and not sharing.
People are revolting against the medium to get their messages.
Facebook can't figure out this.
Oh, they're fighting the tyranny of the feed.
I think people, most people who do this don't know why they're saying it. They're just saying it.
Right. Okay.
So they're hacking the algorithm, Jeff.
They don't. Hey, you know what? We buried the lead. YouTube has finally launched YouTube TV, and I didn't even mention it.
Yeah.
Oh, is that the $35 a month one?
$35 a month. You get ABC, CBS, Fox, and NBC, 35 cable channels. It's an over-the-top service. You get 6 accounts. So with $35 a month, everybody in the family can have an account. You can only watch 3 concurrent streams at a time, though. There are some things missing, like all the channels from Viacom, which include MTV and Comedy Central. Nothing from Turner, so no CNN. Showtime is an add-on, additional cost, not HBO. And then you get YouTube Red originals for free. Not that anybody would pay for those. So they haven't announced a date, but it will roll out in the next few months. And it will be market by market, right? Because if they're going to put ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox, they have to do a deal with a local affiliate. Maybe you get the local affiliate. Smaller cities will have to wait.
You get the crummy ESPN channels. Oh, but do you get Real Disney? That could be in USA, and yeah. Is it Bravo that everyone's excited about? Where are all the Real Housewives? They're on Bravo,
Bravo
right?
Bravo is the Real Housewives, yeah. NFL okay. content on TV and PC, but not mobile, and that's because Verizon, as you know, has exclusive on that.
Mm-hmm.
It integrates with Chromecast and Google Home, so you can say to your home, hey, Google, watch the Desperate Housewives. That's the Real Desperate Housewives of New Jersey and the Southern Atlantic Coast.
And oh, but wait, this isn't on demand, though. This is just like when stuff is on.
Streaming.
Oh.
Oh, it is streaming.
I think. Oh, wait a minute. No, there's DVR-style recording of your favorite shows with unlimited space in Google's cloud. And
you have to go through that. Why go through that effort? Why not just look up the show?
And ad skip.
Oh,
I'm sure it has to do with licensing, right?
Oh, stupidity.
This is challenging. This is so complicated for consumers.
But it's complicated for the companies that want to offer it because all these different stakeholders are saying, well, you can't do that without doing this. And nobody wants to piss off Comcast.
I've pissed off Comcast.
Yeah. So, by the way, this goes... So here it is. If you go to it, it's tv.youtube.com. And... yeah, you know what? For cord cutters, this might be huge. No?
Someone's pointing out it doesn't have the Scripps network with like HGTV, food, DIY. A lot of people like those kind of shows.
Well, if you're that kind of person, you're going to keep your cable, right? But I think what this really is you've got Netflix, you've got Amazon, you've got Google Play, but what you don't have is live events. You don't have the Academy Awards. You don't have football. You don't have the live stuff you want to watch. You don't have locals. You don't have live local news. So this is the add-on service that gives you local live locals. That's a big deal. Price is $35. And, you know, I think everybody's realized by now cord cutting is not about saving money. It's about, you know, giving it to the man. But you're not going to save money by the time you add your Netflix subscription and your HBO Go, HBO Now subscription and all of that, it's going to add up. That's why I don't think it matters if you don't have HBO. You subscribe to it or you get Hulu for the other stuff. This is. I don't think this is intended to be like everything you need. It's the supplementary package that gives you live locals for cord cutters.
So the sequel to The Good Wife.
The Good Fight.
Oh, with Christine Baranski.
The Good Fight.
Which I really want to watch, but I think you can only get that if you subscribe to CBS for like $6 a month.
Yes.
Which is insane.
Yes. It's a mess. We tried to do that. You can't get it on demand. You have to, you can only get
it on
demand. You know what?
You can get 3 episodes on demand and then the rest you have to subscribe. Something like that.
What is this? No one's content is probably that valuable. I mean,
they all believe it is.
Oh, yeah. It is going to be a hard way to fall. And I don't know. So, I mean, some people, like, I'm sure if, like, there was a Star Wars, you know,
There are a few. I think, you know, football is one. You know, CNN is probably valuable. ESPN is very valuable, we think, right?
I think it's probably more less channel focused and maybe more
event and like show focused.
Event or show. Well, like I might pay $5 to watch the Oscars live, right?
That's what users say is I want it a la carte. And that's exactly what the cable company doesn't want to do. They don't even want to give you a channel a la carte.
Right.
You have to buy packages.
Well, that's because
the music industry was afraid of this too. Remember? Steve Jobs forced them to sell 99-cent singles. They didn't want to because they knew most albums have one or two popular good songs. Mm-hmm. The rest is filler. They wanted to sell you the whole CD. But Jobs forced them to, and now look at the music industry. It's crap.
But also look at the paradox there. We ended up at a all-you-can-eat bundle, which is like a cable subscription.
Right. Well, you know, isn't that funny? It ended up going to that.
Yeah.
That was that article I was talking about last week, the great unbundling.
Right. Or
the great rebundling, I should say. Where everybody's going back to bundles. Consumers, in the long run, lose every time.
He's just not optimistic today, is he?
Consumers, well, in the in the short run, consumers lose. In the long run, they may win, but it's going to be the very long run.
The moral arc of history tends towards benefiting consumers.
Yeah, yeah. In 100 years, you'll be able to watch any show you want.
There you go.
Well, in a way, that's why torrents exist, why piracy exists, because this is the thing that most terrifies these big content companies and their aggregators, is that consumers, thanks to technology, can disintermediate them and just steal this stuff onesie twosie. And that's why they're so scared of that piracy. This is what really scares them.
Well, there are cost things to think about. The cost of producing content should be, certain types of content should be spread across a wide audience, even if that wide audience isn't consuming it. That's the same argument we do for like broadband.
That's nuts.
It's
I mean,
that
consumers
nuts.
Say, everybody, well, you don't, you pay to see a movie. I don't pay for a bundle of movies when I go to the movie theater. You should pay for the show you want to watch. And to force, this is why there's piracy, because they forced aggregation. They forced all this crap. We stopped buying CDs because you'd buy a CD because you liked that song and there was nothing else on it that you liked. And it backfired on them. And that's because consumers really just want to buy a song or a show. Shouldn't they be allowed to do that? And I think it would work if you did. Maybe not. HBO has a bunch of weak series that are powered by one or two really strong series, right? Is that that's the theory, right?
That is the theory.
It's also just inertia. I want to watch movies. The movies are there, you know.
It's true. I mean, like, once we cut the cord, I watched so much less TV because I had to make an active choice on what I wanted to watch. And that was actually really nice because I found I had extra hours to
that's the worst.
Install smart devices.
That's the worst thing from Hollywood's point of view.
Yeah. I know.
That's the real existential threat. They might not watch it. They might not need us at all.
I've turned to podcasting.
That's an interesting theory. We need a 500-channel universe, not merely because we aggregate because the bundles the costs, but because if people don't have this constant flow of content, pretty soon they'll go, oh, I guess I really didn't need that. I'm going to go read a book.
What's that?
That is what I do.
I'm going to go feed my tardigrades. It's tardigrade feeding time. Is posting on Facebook a constitutional right?
This is a fascinating story. It's not about whether Facebook cuts you on or off or not, but it's about whether the government of I forget which state ruled that a sex offender could not go on social media.
Issy Lepowski writing for Wired. Lester Packingham Jr., registered sex offender in 2002, he took to Facebook to celebrate a recently dismissed parking ticket. Praise be to God. Wow. But by using Facebook, he was breaking a 2008 North Carolina law that prohibits registered sex offenders from accessing websites that enable people to exchange information where minors can participate. Facebook is one of those sites. He fought back. He said, that's a violation of my First Amendment rights.
Yep.
And it's going to the Supreme Court?
Yep.
Interesting.
Wow.
There was what
it says further here is that Facebook, it's not just, it's a First Amendment case, but it's also saying that Facebook is, you know, critical to an open society. It's a speech utility. It's a speech necessity. And I don't know how all that cuts. It's fascinating.
So it's accepted that a state can ban a hacker from using the internet for a period of time.
But this may challenge that.
The state can limit where a sex offender lives.
Right. That's what they argue, by the way. It's no.
But the sex offender can live somewhere.
Well,
if this is the primary means of speech.
I don't think you could argue convincingly that it's the primary means of speech yet. But it's worth, and I'm not sure that'll be really an interesting case. You're right, Jeff.
It really is fascinating, yeah. And where's the Times version, too? I'm trying to find that.
Are they arguing?
They've already argued this in front of the Supreme Court.
Oh.
It sounds like.
Is this from 2008? Hold on.
The Times version.
Wait a minute. We're
okay.
What the hell? It's in Chinese.
Yeah, that's a link to the Chinese version.
What? Wait a minute. What? Of the New York Times?
They started doing that, I think, haven't they?
Oh, that's interesting.
All right.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I read it in Spanish, so I'm like, okay.
Do you? Wait a minute. Really?
I'm learning Spanish, and the New York Times has excellent coverage in Spanish. That was Spanish language edition. So I am practicing my Spanish by reading it there. So
this is being argued or has been argued.
Well, the justice's remarks suggested they would strike down, says the New York Times, the North Carolina law under the First Amendment.
Right. Justice Kagan took particular issue with the idea that the law would prevent someone from accessing, for instance, President Trump's Twitter feed. This is it's a key communication channel between the president and the public. This has become a crucially important channel of political communication. What?
So this has become a crucially important channel of political communication, and a person couldn't go onto those sites and find out what these members of our government are thinking or saying or doing. So Facebook gets to be a right.
Trump saves Twitter.
Now, is he arguing just to be able to get on as opposed to post?
That's right. He could read. There's a question of speech here.
The government or North Carolina argued, well, there's other places they can get information. Samuel Alito agreed. He said, I know there are people who think life is not possible without Twitter and Facebook and these things, and that 2003 was the dark ages.
He's so grumpy.
But I don't know that there are any channels of communications that were available at that time that have been taken away. But the president only tweets on Twitter.
It goes on Facebook too, though, I think, doesn't it? So Justice Kennedy said that social media sites had become, and in some ways had surpassed, the public square as a place for discussion and debate.
Right on, right on, right on.
Quote, the sites that Justice Kagan has described and their utility and the extent of their coverage are greater than the communication you could have ever had, even in the paradigm of public square, Justice Kennedy said.
Wow.
So maybe you just need to change your sentencing laws, because in jail you don't actually have access to these places, to social media sites necessarily. So then that kind of raises the question of, could you institute a punishment for someone like a sexual offender that actually sentences them to not having access to this over a period of time, which is kind of that would be a way around this. Yes.
Well, we'll find out.
They mentioned LinkedIn, and they say that if this complainant wanted to try to find a job, the way you do that is on LinkedIn, and teenagers are allowed to post information there. Ergo, you've cut them off from being able to get a job.
Isn't that fascinating?
Justice Kennedy mused that any number of free speech doctrines doomed the law.
Interesting.
Really fascinating.
Where do you stand on that? Should Facebook be a fundamental right that can't be?
Well, and then, here's the problem.
We don't let felons vote. I mean, there's precedent for governments.
There's a lot of people who think that is crazy wrong and want to change that, though.
But there's plenty of precedent for a government restricting somebody's rights based on
criminal
conviction. But
that's not covered by the First Amendment. The First Amendment is a matter of speech.
So you think that the right to speak trumps the right to vote?
It clearly does. I mean, the Constitution, I mean, that's franchise versus speeches.
Okay.
Though there's another case today of a teenage girl who spoke at a immigration rally. She's a dreamer, brought here when she was young, and she promptly got arrested.
No, that
chill,
is wrong.
What chill does that put on speech?
Yeah.
What was she arrested for?
Hold on. Well, for being so-called illegal.
Got arrested for being illegal?
Yes.
Aren't they protected still?
No, not in this case. Oh, hello, it's on my Twitter. I put it on Twitter, but I tweet so damn much, I won't find it.
Wow.
Hold on. This is a big story. Hold on. Ay.
I can go to twitter.com/Jeff Jarvis. Twitter needs a search a better search that I could like say, what did Jeff Jarvis tweet?
Oh my God. Hello, 2008. They want your complaint back.
Well, it doesn't, just because it's an old complaint doesn't mean it's not legitimate.
That is true.
So I'll put it on the rundown. I can't, for some reason on the rundown, I can't get to the comments. So I'll put it at the bottom of other right now. Hold on. I'm getting there. Here we go. There it is. Yeah.
Oh my God. The rundown has so many interesting stories that I hadn't scrolled down to yet. Look at me.
Yeah. I know. We've
put some on as we go.
Yeah.
So 22, she was a teenager earlier. She's now 22. Daniela Vargas was detained by ICE agents shortly after speaking at a news conference in downtown Jackson, according to her attorney. It was earlier, her brother and father had been detained outside their home, and she had in February, and she had hid at that time. She was planning to go into hiding. She came to the U.S. when she was 7 from Argentina.
So she's not a dreamer if she wasn't born here.
No, but she's not protected not by DACA right
dreamer
now.
DACA protects her. Okay.
Yeah, DACA, I mean.
Stop. Yeah. Her DACA, she didn't get it renewed. It was expired.
She didn't renew.
Well, she was in the process of getting it renewed. But it had already expired. I'm not saying this makes it right, but I see why she wasn't protected.
It was a visa. Dude, a visa overstay.
Yeah, but what does that do? My point is, what does that do to speech?
Chilling effect, yeah.
That would be chilling.
Does she have a First Amendment right to speech? And does this action chill that?
This wasn't, she can speak, but she could also get arrested for being a criminal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a conflation of two laws. I mean, it is, okay.
That's sad.
This frustrates me too.
Now, here's a happy story. Oh, a Lord. Norwegian news site that's requiring you to pass a quiz before you can share their stories.
But before you can comment on
before you can comment.
Yes.
I think this
and
is
it's
a great
done
idea.
Wonders.
This is, by the way, you don't know this because I got on your feed and you reshared Chaz Edwards. Chaz is an old friend. He was one of our great sales guys at Tech TV.
Yeah,
and he's now at Pop Up Magazine.
He was in Federated Media for a bit.
He was at Federated. That's right.
Yeah.
So NRK Beta, which is a tech vertical of the Norwegian public broadcaster NRK. Said that you have to answer 3 basic multiple choice questions about the article before you can post a comment. I'm not sure that's a bad idea.
No, I think it's kind of interesting.
You run the risk of less engagement, but on the other hand, there's people engaging that aren't reading, so.
Yeah. People have used comments under stories too, just as temporary forums, and this cuts that out.
So they've developed a WordPress plugin, so you can use this too.
Ha!
Nice.
Well, it also goes to a neat question of defining. There's two other neat questions that come from this. Number one, what is informed, and number two, did the article inform? So the quiz could actually be saying, this is the core idea of the article. You had to read it. We know you read it because you want to get into comment, but the article did a bad job of informing you.
Ah.
I can see my editor coming up to Stacy. 60% of our commenters have failed the multiple choice quiz. Their article sucks.
Do not understand what you wrote. We're getting no comments on this page. Why? No one understands it.
That's awesome.
By the way, apparently it's fairly easy to hack around it, but they point out, hey, if you can hack, if you care that much, go ahead, post. I'm a ranter, but first let me hack this quiz. Amazon.
We have,
go ahead.
I
was going to congratulate Mr. B.
Yes.
Because Amazon has 3 Oscars on Sunday. Amazon put money into what are the movies? Is it Moonlight,
Manchester by the Sea?
I remember that Manchester by the Sea.
Boy, depressing and depressing.
That. Yeah. Did you see Moonlight?
And Casey Affleck, sexual assaulter.
Now, is it fair to say that since it was a suit that it was settled and never? Yes, it's fair to say that. Okay, just asking.
Yes. I'm like, I'm going to hold him accountable. Maybe he's not criminally accountable. Fine.
Yeah, he was never prosecuted. There were two lawsuits which were settled. And, of course, part of the settlement was a gag order. So we don't know what happened or what the amount of money was or whether there was admission of guilt. I'm betting not.
I don't care. I mean, I think if someone, I mean, I'm of the opinion that people making accusations and being willing to take them to court, most cases,
it's so rare that you would do that if it weren't legit, right?
So I'm like, okay, right. He's not guilty there. Stacey's court of public opinion.
Okay. Amazon also won for the best foreign language film, which was, of course, The Salesman. And that was created by an Iranian-born director, Asghar Farhad, who decided not to come to the U.S. to accept his award because he was, because of the immigration ban. He was unhappy about that. So he nominated the first Iranian in space, Anousheh Ansari, to read his statement. In his absence, he said, is out of respect for the people of my country and those of the other six nations who have been disrespected by the inhumane law that bans entry of immigrants to the U.S. So, a little political commentary there. Well
what?
Done.
At a celebrity award show?
What? What a shocker. And Netflix also won for The White Helmets, which is a short subject documentary about Syria. But I love Jimmy Kimmel's line during the Oscars. He said, well, I'll let him.
Amazon is represented at the Academy Awards. Amazon is the first streaming service nominated for Best Picture. Jeff Bezos is the founder and CEO, and I want to say congratulations to Jeff. You know, and I also want you to know, Jeff, if you win tonight, you can expect your Oscar to arrive in 2 to 5 business days, possibly stolen by a Grubhub delivery man.
And Jeff is there in his little...
I'm surprised you couldn't hear the laugh all the way to the front.
I know. Jeff's honking laugh.
So this Amazon refuses to hand over data on whether it's got overheard a murder. What do we think about that?
We talked about that a while back. Is this the one
the hot tub murders.
All right.
That's what it was. I'm grateful.
You're still a reporter, I could tell. You've worked the crime beat. No, this is new news on this. We did talk a little bit about
this. Was
it
Amazon is refusing?
Yeah. Amazon says there's a First Amendment right in this.
They're afraid of the chill on using a scholar.
Right. People won't speak to their scholar. They also
They also argue that
it's a fishing expedition.
The data, they don't need this. It sounds like they're trying to figure out if the voices match the guy, who was in the home at the time.
I see.
What is the chance if you're going to murder somebody that, oh, by the way, I'm going to have Echo play some nice music while we're...
Well, so they were having party and drinking in the hot tub. So I can see...
Maybe they were
it sounds like they were
something.
Completely trash. This is not a premeditated murder. Right. But the other thing in this case that was worth noting is police were very savvy. They actually pulled data from their water meter.
Right.
They
showed that he was excessive water use in the middle of the night.
To clean up the crime scene.
Well, that's their theory. We don't.
Yes. To allegedly clean up the crime scene.
Allegedly. Amazon also had a documentary, the James Baldwin documentary, I'm Not Your Negro, that was nominated but lost to O.J. I mean, that tells you something right there.
That was really powerful, though, if you saw it.
O.J. Made in America or I'm Not Your Negro?
I am Not Your Negro.
I know. I really want to see that. Yeah.
You don't put it off as like, I don't know if I'm ready for this viewing. Just do it.
I've seen clips of it. It's Baldwin's amazing. Really amazing. Was amazing.
I was about to say, he's not like Frederick Douglass.
Yeah. Frederick Douglass is back. Right. Let's see. What else?
So we have a robot video. We have two robot videos.
Oh, yeah. Well, now I showed this robot video before, but I guess...
It was the leaked video. This is the official one. It's even scarier.
It's longer. And then we also have a pizza robot.
We're talking. So this is the handle robot. So we have... This is Boston Dynamics. Are they still a Google company or not?
I wanted the same thing. They have not been sold yet.
Okay.
So I thought CNN got this wrong.
Because Google bought them and then said, oh, but they're going to stop their Defense Department contracts. And then they couldn't or didn't. And then Google said, all right, well, we're going to.
Last March, they put them on the market. Rumors were they were to be sold to Toyota, but that as of last May, that didn't happen. Yeah, I looked this up before because I thought CNN was wrong on this. And I actually looked at it first before I start.
Well, and
reporting.
And as we've said about before, I mean, I think Google is probably smart in not getting involved with killer robots at the moment.
Yeah, well, that conflicts with the do no evil.
Well, it doesn't have to be a killer. They can also be for search and rescue.
Have you seen those robots?
Well, look, here it's called Handle, and here's the official video, not the leaked video. It's a robot on wheels. So we've seen the dog. Remember the dog? And then remember the bipedal robot that they kept pushing over? And there it is in the background, in fact. Handle's fast.
Imagine it coming for you and then beating your skull in with those hooves.
We know what, you know. Would we remake 1984? Was it 1984 that had the rats in the box? With Stacy, we just put her in a box with robots.
I did ask for someone. I wanted someone to Photoshop an ice figure skating, like this robot doing figure skating, because that's what this looks like.
It does, doesn't it?
And I thought the robot would get dizzy here, right? I anthropomorphized. I think it's going to get
dizziness.
Dizzy.
It can look at that. Oh man, it can handle uneven surfaces. It can jump 4 feet in the air straight up. It has endpoint control. Okay, well, there you go. I mean, now notice it's tethered right now. I don't know why it's tethered.
That disappointed it.
And then it's going to pick up 100 pounds as if it weighed nothing. Somebody said this. It looks just like RoboCop. And you know what happened with RoboCop.
This is scary.
Oh, man.
It just runs down the stairs.
It's snowy and wet out, but does that stop? No, Handle does not stop. I feel sorry for the people who have office space next to Boston Dynamics because they keep running these robots out to the parking lot. Here's the jump, 4 feet straight up. Can play imagine it playing ping pong and getting angry and jumping over the table. There you go.
Yeah, see, again, terrifying.
Yeah.
Well, then will you, Stacey, order a robot-made pizza?
Yeah. You know, I would
you
even.
You know that story, Leo?
Made by a pizza? Sorry. I thought you said a robot made by a pizza. But
you go to the next
it's the other way around. Yeah, I got the video. It's loading up here. This is a pizza made by a robot. Well, it's just like an assembly line. Come on.
Exactly. That's all it is. It's cheating.
Complicated as making pizza.
You know, there's a gynecologist robot. And I think that's probably a better question to ask.
What does it do?
It
does it pelvic exams?
So I'm eating a pizza that's made by a team.
I'm sorry. Is that for people who are really shy?
I think it's just to like optimize healthcare delivery. Gyno robot.
Talk about being dehumanized.
Yeah, this
Would
robot
you be more comfortable?
Oh, it does surgery.
Surgery, I understand.
I've had that surgery. Yeah,
this is a cool looking robot too. It's the Da Vinci robot.
When I came into the OR with the robot that did my prostate surgery, it's much taller than you think. And you kind of look up and salute it and say, don't screw up.
So you had, what kind of surgery did you have?
I had a prostatectomy and then I...
And was there a doctor or...
Yeah, the doctor's over in a console.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
So this is minimally invasive robotic surgery. Oh, here's a picture. I don't know if I can get a video for you, but... Here's a picture. I wouldn't want to. Is that what yours looked like?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's terrifying. Yeah.
What's it called?
Like a spider. It's the, Da Vinci.
Da Vinci. Da Vinci.
What's so this is the one you had?
Yeah.
What's
the
advantage of this?
The arms are all up.
You still need a doctor.
It can get into places and
he's looking at the view through the laparoscope or whatever.
Yeah, so it's just it's the next step of laparoscopic surgery.
That's
I bet
cool.
You could probably, can you clean these easier too than people? I don't know. I'm curious.
You can't steam clean people. How about Pizza Hut's smart shoes that will order a pizza for you?
Wait, the shoes? Why? What? What is happening in our world?
Our people are lazy. This is a 30-second commercial.
Yeah, this is not the guy who's ordering pizzas from his shoes.
Yes, he is. Watch. Here, I'll turn on the sound.
With this, and now, from my Pizza Hut pod tops.
Here's your large two-topping Pizza Hut.
Oh, it's a dash button in your shoe.
Dash button,
just stick the dash button on the recliner side, people. Come on.
It's a dash button in your shoe.
I'm hungry suddenly.
Oh, don't eat a Pizza Hut pizza.
There comes a time when...
All right, enough of that. Stacey, unplug and replug your microphone. You're starting to crackle a little bit, if you will.
Unplug and replug.
She's in a bad mood.
How am I now?
Now you're talking on your computer mic, so you got to switch
over.
There you go. You sound good now. It took a second. Do we want to talk about Uber at all? What's going on with Uber? We talked, I think, a little bit about it last week. Is it over for Uber? Here's an article from Ryan Felton in Jalopnik. Uber is doomed. The latest, of course,
Uber's doomed.
The latest, yes, Travis Kalanick might be doomed. Did you see the video of him yelling at his driver who had the temerity to claim that
I thought it was going to be worse than what it was.
You know, this is part of the problem with having a founder that's so closely conflated with a business.
Right.
And I mean, for better or worse, if your founder's a jerk, I mean, Ohm, for example, was conflated with GigaOm, but Ohm happened to be a stand-up stellar fellow. So
don't name your company after yourself. That's for sure.
That is for sure.
Well, Kalanick wouldn't. I think I'm going to order a Kalanick.
Oh, and I want to correct. Chris Assad tweeted me, and he said I wasn't. Chris, I said last week, had said that something about the Fowler article, but in fact, he wasn't talking about the Fowler article. I've forgotten.
You've lost me entirely.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Whatever it was.
Well, if you
Leo
guys don't,
sorry.
You definitely don't.
Was it this show?
Yeah, it was on this show. We were talking about Susan Fowler's article about Uber, right?
Okay.
Was that not on this show? Maybe it was on some other show.
No, we talked about it.
Yeah. And Saad had posted on Facebook, I think, you know, that he was upset about Kara Swisher's take on it, not the Fowler article originally.
Oh, I see.
Saad works at Uber. He's head of the developer platform at Uber, so. And a listener, apparently. So I apologize, Chris. He was not complaining about the Fowler article, but about Kara Swisher's piece. And you probably wouldn't be alone in that regard. I like Kara, but she can definitely... She's as bad as Jeff when it comes to getting cranky.
Hey. No, she's better at being cranky.
She's really found
she's
her cranky. Voice.
But you know what I want? You know what I want from Kara?
What?
I want a weekly political podcast from Kara.
Well, she already does a Recode show, but you're right.
But not a political. I want her to do a political rant, even just 30 seconds a week. I would kill for that.
That would
really?
Be
who would you kill?
She also wrote about Amit Singhal, who was a Google engineer, remember, went to Google as Uber as a senior vice president of engineering. Uber said, we didn't know, I don't think anybody knew, that Singhal had been fired at Google over sexual harassment.
He left as...
Under a cloud.
Yes, he left under a cloud. He wasn't fired.
He wasn't fired. He left under a cloud, according to... Kara, a female employee, filed a sexual harassment complaint against him in 2015. Google later allowed Singhal to leave before the company could take further action. Singhal denies the allegations, but he has stepped down at Uber. Uber's, I would imagine, very sensitive these days about those kinds of stories. Did you read about the Border Patrol agent who asked a software engineer to prove that he was a software engineer by balancing a bee tree? Celestine Omin is a 28-year-old software engineer from Lagos, Nigeria, who was traveling to the U.S. on Sunday as part of his job with Andela, which is a startup. Actually, Mark Zuckerberg and Priscilla Chan are investors. Upon arrival at JFK, he was questioned by a border agent, waited for an hour, then was brought to a different room to be questioned by a second agent. He wrote on LinkedIn, quote, your visa says you're a software engineer. Is that correct? The officer asked. Omin, in a tone the engineer described as accusatory. When Omin said it was right, the officer presented him with a piece of paper and a pen and told him to answer the following questions. Write a function to check if a binary search tree is balanced. And what is an abstract class and why do you need it? To Omin, who had not slept in more than 24 hours, the questions seemed opaque and could have multiple answers. While he's a skilled software engineer with more than 7 years of experience, he later said the questions looked to him like someone with no technical background Googled something like questions to ask a software engineer. He did his best to answer the questions, and after first being told he'd flunked the plot pop quiz, was nevertheless allowed to go, presumably because in the meantime, Omin's employer had been contacted and vouched for him. And we all probably saw the tweet, which was retweeted thousands of times. I was just asked to balance a binary search tree by JFK's Airport Immigration. Welcome to America. I thought it was a joke.
Yeah. You know, I've been talking to lots of people who've been coming across the border, people, you know, from Ireland, people from England, people from Germany, all getting more hassled. All.
Yeah. Are any of them white?
Yes. They're all white. Okay. They're just foreigners. Ferners are getting hassled, period.
I think it's more Ferners, not just
it's
Ferners.
It's been hard. You know, this is not, ever since 9/11, it's been a little bit more difficult. I mean, I remember, you know, friends, people like Will Harris complaining, he's a Brit. You know, you had to get people entering the U.S. have to submit fingerprints, answer tough questions. And then it goes the other way. I think the Canadian Border Patrol started doing similar things to America's entering Canada, almost in retaliation. They have a broad right to do this, and a lot of discretion.
But that also speaks for our country, and it's shameful what they're doing to people who are our friends and our relatives and our coworkers who want to just come to our country.
Well, it's a little
weird. They're
doing
it to people who like are citizens of our country too. If they look the wrong way. And that's frustrating for my friends because that's not cool.
Well, and there are a lot of stories. There's the woman who was coming, where was she from? Ireland to speak at a conference in Houston and was detained at the airport, almost turned back. She says, I'm never coming to.
Well, there's a beloved Australian children's writer.
That's who it was.
Australian writer.
She said,
and then there was a Holocaust expert who was almost turned back from the conference.
All right, let's take a break and get your picks of the week. What do you say?
Yep.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
Seems about that time.
You know what this is, my friends? This, my friends, is the answer to all your Wi-Fi problems, Dad. This here is the Eero. Why just settle for a dumb old Wi-Fi router that's so 20th century when you can join the cool kids who are using mesh routers, and these look good. These are beautiful. Eero it's actually a year old. Can you believe this? Happy one Eero birthday to Eero, the original whole home Wi-Fi system. It's a mesh system that blankets your entire house in fast, reliable Wi-Fi. No more buffering, no more dead zones. Wi-Fi that just works. See, what happened was Wi-Fi was wildly successful, and suddenly, even if you lived in a relatively, you know, remote area, there were lots of Wi-Fi signals all over your house, lots of congestion, houses got bigger, we demanded more bandwidth, and pretty soon this, you know, Wi-Fi router you'd been using just wasn't good enough. Eero created this notion of mesh routers, multiple routers communicating rapidly with one another. So unlike an extender, they don't have the bandwidth. They give you full bandwidth throughout your entire house. Each Eero unit does about 1,500 square feet. So these three units would do 4,500 square feet, and I'll vouch for that. That's a little bigger than our house, but we use three units to cover the entire house easily. What's also great about the Eero, they're overbuilt. And I did not know this. Maybe you didn't either, Stacey. I know you're kind of an expert on this stuff, but they put more processor and more memory in the Eero than they needed.
Mm-hmm.
Because they wanted to be able to push software updates. In fact, they pushed their most recent one, the 2.0 mesh update. Big, big update. And there's more capability there. They also automatically upgrade the firmware. So it's one of the, you know, key ingredients of any IoT device is that it be patchable for security issues. And the Eero is absolutely, absolutely up to date. Protected with state-of-the-art WPA2 encryption, of course. And there's features in the Eero app that are very sophisticated. It kind of hides the complexity makes it easy to set up. But if you want to dig down into the app, there's some stuff you can do that is really high end. Check it out on Amazon. Great reviews, 750 of them. There's a 1-year warranty. It works with your existing modem and internet service. And there's, of course, a 30-day money-back guarantee. Eero, the original whole home Wi-Fi system, to celebrate its first birthday, they've permanently lowered the prices for Eero. You can get the 3-pack, and again, that's about 4,500 square feet, for $399. That's $100 off. 2-pack, enough for 3,000 square feet. Most homes, that'd be plenty. $299, $50 off. Go to EEERO.com or Best Buy or Amazon. And never again, this is why I had to go to the Eero. Will you hear, honey, the Wi-Fi's not working. I can't watch the TV. What's going on? Fix it. Fix it. Right? But I fixed it. No complaints. EEERO.com. We thank him for not only the support of This Week in Google, but for saving my marriage. Well, let's see here. Why don't we start with Stacy's pick? I'm sure you've got something exciting and fabulous for us.
Oh, I wish. I have like so many devices that are like en route. So
are you
instead
excited about? What are you most excited about that you haven't seen yet?
Oh, you guys. I'm like, oh.
Oven doorbell. You won't believe it.
It's amazing. No, there's a device called, so I'm excited about this. The review unit's not coming out, though, so I can't tell you like if it's any good or not. But it's called the Bond, and it is an IR and a RF device. The reason I'm excited about it is because it's $99, and it is going to be able to do with the IR, it can control a bunch of different devices like air conditioners and
so it's
fans.
It's an IR blaster.
Well, it's not just an IR blaster. You just plug this in somewhere in your house, and then you can also tie in, like, I'm excited about it because I've got these Somfy motorized blinds, and it's going to work with those according to the company. And to set it up, instead of doing this crazy, insane Z-Wave setup that I do right now, which sucks and it takes a long time, I'm going to be able to just point my remote at this blaster thing basically in the app, and it's going to automatically add it. So it's going to be a lot easier to add my devices.
So you just
and you can do it with ceiling fans.
Wow.
Yes. And it's got the Echo. So now if you do it with, like, if you have a remote that controls your ceiling fan, you can actually program the Bond to that and then use it to open your ceiling or to turn on your ceiling fan.
With your voice.
With your voice.
Wow.
You could also use an app, but I'm anti-app because I hate pulling out my phone.
Yeah, no, I think the Amazon Echo is actually the killer application for IoT, frankly.
So that's what nice. This is going to be my device if it works whenever it arrives, probably, because I am super stoked about it.
And there you see it, ladies and gentlemen, the perilous roller coaster ride between high hopes and dashed hopes that every IoT device goes through.
Speaking of dashed hopes, guys, I got my Logitech Harmony working.
Oh.
It was some weird confluence of events.
Oh, good.
So we're all good. And
your husband's
I don't even
ready
know.
To kill you.
My husband is now speaking to me, and he admits that it might have been worth it to pay $99 for voice control of our television.
Now I'm going to go back to mine because I was waiting to see if you were able to get it working.
And I hooked it up to my Stringify account, guys, and I'm playing with some recipes.
I love Stringify. So, that was a great pick. Thank you.
No problem.
Yeah, thank you. So, okay, well, that's good enough for a pick. You're not picking it, but you're excited to be getting it.
I'm like, sorry, you guys. There's going to be a bunch of stuff coming in the next couple weeks.
No, don't apologize. I like it. Bondhome.io. Available for pre-order now at $99. Jeff, I'm sure. I saw a good number, but I'm curious if...
I have lots of numbers.
Yeah,
first, though, I want to mention something, if I may.
Yes.
The First Draft Coalition, which is a wonderful organization working on more facts in news, together with news organizations and others, backed by Google, I think Facebook too, has launched CrossCheck in France to check on the news in their election. So I just wanted to mention that as a bit of a plug.
This is a fake news.
This is not my number.
Protector. Yeah. So when is the election? Is it soon?
Yeah, soon. And then Germany after
is
that.
Is Marie Pen a front runner or?
It for a plurality, yes.
Okay.
The guessing is that in the runoff she would suffer, but who knows?
Who knows?
And then Geert Wilders in the Netherlands is also is a similar populist politician. So that's going on. So anyway, so yeah, I got lots of numbers here. What I probably like is that Google now says that we watch 1 billion hours of YouTube a day, which is 10 times more than Netflix, though Netflix makes plenty of money their way, and is approaching the 1.2 billion hours of television we watch in a day.
1 billion hours. Is the 1.2 billion number a U.S. only number, or is that
Nielsen global? Data shows 1.25 billion of TV watched America. Yes.
So, is the YouTube number 1 billion global?
That's a good question. Yes, I'll bet you're right.
But it is approaching TV.
If you click numbers on the link at the top there, that's blog amazing post from Google.
But even the it number 1 billion hours watched, I mean, it makes me think of how much server and bandwidth you're devoting to YouTube.
Jeez.
I mean, that's how many petabytes of data a day is that?
I know.
If it's a billion hours and an hour of YouTube streaming is probably, let's be generous.
An hour of HD streaming is
it's about 700
gigabytes.
Two. Oh, wow.
Oh, sorry. An hour of HD streaming or 4K HD is about two.
So let's say one, just to be generous, because not everybody's watching in HD.
Okay.
So that's 1 gigabyte times 1 billion.
Which gets us, is that a petabyte?
What's a billion gigabytes?
I think a billion gigabytes, is that a petabyte or a zettabyte? Help me, Google, convert.
Well, let's just Google it. A billion gigabytes is an exabyte. No.
Exabyte.
Yeah, it's an exabyte.
You wanted a number of the day, man. You got a number.
An exabyte of data a day? That isn't even imaginable.
I think Cisco imagined it and
You know, you get megabyte, and 1,000 megabytes is a gigabyte. 1,000 gigabytes is a terabyte. 1,000 terabytes is a petabyte. 1,000 petabytes is an exabyte. Then there's zeta and yada. Someday we'll get a yadabyte of data out of YouTube.
Yada, yada.
Yada, yada, yada. Wow, an exabyte of data a day. That is a number, Jeff.
It is. What was the number you saw you liked?
That was the one. I was wondering if you would mention that. I thought that was a really good number. Do you have some others if you want to?
I
like this story, which is a huge story that was just broke. They found, you even know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. They have found what they believe are fossils of some of the earliest living organisms on Earth. And if you believe Earth is 6,000 years
old. Water bears?
Yes.
I was about to say tardigrades.
If you believe Earth is 6,000 years old, just plug your ears right now. Tiny filaments, knobs, and tubes in Canadian rocks dated to be 4.28 billion years old. That's not much younger than the Earth itself. And stretches the previous number, by several hundred million years.
So if it makes you think that life is less a fluke than something that comes along and those planets recently discovered, you wonder whether they're...
We had a great interview on Saturday on the new Screensavers with one of the planetary scientists, a 3 PhD guy. Who was involved in that. And he said that there's another story. Help me out here. Another research project being done to take the basic chemicals, early planetary chemicals, and combine them. And there is strong evidence. They haven't written the paper up yet, but I got the impression from him. He has an inside track on this, that they were able to create RNA just by combining these elements. That if that were the case, and we've now found these Earth-like planets, including three planets that are in the Goldilocks zone in this new star, that are, you know, in other words, where life as we know it could exist. Plenty of water, which is also a condition. And these scientists can show that the actual creation of replicating life from basic chemicals is possible through a lightning strike or some other addition of energy, then it would, it was his opinion that it answers the question. Not only are we not alone, but that life is probably very common in the universe. It was I strongly suggest you listen to that interview on the New Screensavers on Saturday. It was chilling. It was fascinating. So I asked about Fermi's paradox. I said, well, if life is common, because there's billions and billions of galaxies, each with billions of stars. If life is, and if there's many, many planets, there might be, you know, an exabyte of planets out there. If life is common, why haven't we heard from anybody? And he said, well, it might be common, but it's also easy to wipe out. And he said, getting to the level of civilization we're at, we're talking about life like this kind of life, single celled, you know, filament. For life to get to the point where it could travel through space or communicate through space, that's a lot harder.
Or, you know, in the science fiction world, it could have occurred, but in a galaxy long, long ago and far, far away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't have a pic, but I do have a picture. You know, when you do a Reddit Ask Me Anything, an AMA on Reddit, you're required to submit a photo proving that you are you. Bill Gates recently did an AMA on Reddit. This is the photo he submitted.
It's so great.
To prove his identity.
God.
I don't know what it means.
Oh, it's David S. Pumpkins.
Try to describe this to the listening audience.
Well, so he's wearing a suit made of Christmas trees. It's obviously his Christmas suit. Not made of Christmas trees, but it's a patchwork quilt with Christmas tree images on it. He's holding up a sign, of course, saying this is Bill Gates. And then he's flanked by two strangely clad creatures. They look like Dr. Seuss creatures with fuzzy hair, black polka dots, white kind of spandex outfits and gloves. And their makeup is very scary. They're white-faced with black rings around their eyes and black lipstick. What are they?
So if you go to Google David S. Pumpkins on Saturday Night Live, this is what this is. Except he's obviously like somebody as Bill S. Christmas Trees.
David S. Pumpkins?
Yeah, just Google it. I can't even explain this, but it's very popular.
It's a thing. And apparently, what I didn't know is Bill Gates made a video. This isn't just still. Get ready. It's Second Chance Theater.
49th floor.
Oh, no, here we go. Here we go.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you need to watch the other one.
That's Bill Gates, the third richest man in the world. Maybe the second. Yes. If you're the second richest man in the world,
his own thing.
And the snowmen are part of it.
Any questions?
That is the strangest Reddit setup I have ever heard of.
You really should Google David S. Pumpkins, and then it will all... I know it doesn't sound like it means anything, but it will make sense. I mean, at some level.
I'm scared.
No, do it. It's cute. It's funny. There you go.
So it's kind of a not scary haunted house.
It's the haunted house is scary, and then this guy comes up, and they're like, what the heck is this?
That's not scary at all.
But you should, at some point in time, just watch the whole thing.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're like, no, Stacey, I'm never going to.
I just love it that Bill Gates has that kind of sense of humor while saving the world. It's a good combination. Thank you, Stacey S. Higginbotham III, for joining us on the show today. Always a pleasure to having you. IoTpodcast.com. If you want to listen to her great show with Kevin Toefel, the amazing middle-aged runner.
Yes. Oh, yes. And he put up a cute video. So of his, he got an S cam. So he videoed his agile dog. So not only is he an amazing runner, he has a very cute dog.
You must listen. And Stacy on IoT.com is the other place. Oh, I know what you're talking about. The dog. So he says, 5 minutes after we put up the Nest Cam and go to work, the dog is busted. This dog is a bad dog. Look, what is she, a little poodle?
It's Norm. He's a Bichon Frise.
Oh, I had a Bichon Frise. They are, by the way, renowned circus dogs. And now you know Super why. Smart. He jumped up on the counter, and he's seeing if there's anything up there to eat. That's why you get a Nest Cam, right? That's pretty funny. Mr. Jeffrey Jarvis is a professor of journalism at the City University of New York. He's in mourning over the Pixel, the Google Pixel.
And I moonlight as death.
Ingmar Bergman on line 3 for you, sir. If you want to read his books, there are many. Geeks Bearing Gifts, Private Parts, What Would Google Do? He's got a sickle, and he's not afraid to use it. Blogging at BuzzMachine.com. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. Please tune in and join us. If you can't watch live or be in the chat room at irc.twit.tv, don't worry. We can make on-demand audio and video available for you, and there is no subscription cost. No, my friends, always free. YouTube.com/twit, or you'll find, it's everywhere in every podcatcher, Stitcher, Slacker, Google Play. Just subscribe. That way you won't miss an episode. This madness will continue. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.